deal with a rising tide of migrants. The deployment comes as the summer travel season ramps up. TSA officials say it won't involve uniformed airport screeners, at least not at first. And this is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
President Trump will be honoring peace officers shortly on Peace Officers Memorial Day, as he is scheduled to speak this morning at the annual National Peace Officers Memorial Service in Washington, D.C. It gets underway at 11 a.m. Eastern. The day was established on May 15, 1962, by President Kennedy to honor law enforcement officers who died or became disabled while in the line of duty. Fans continue to mourn the death of comedian Tim Conway, who passed away yesterday at the age of 85. He got his on-camera start in Ohio in the 1950s on WJW-TV, and then achieved fame from roles on McHale's Navy and, of course, on The Carol Burnett Show. Conway saying a few years ago he learned he was funny at a pretty early age.
Whenever I got up to read in class, everybody laughed at me, so I thought it was kind of funny to keep it going.
Again, Tim Conway was 85. The Disney company says the creators of Game of Thrones will write the next Star Wars movie. Disney CEO Bob Iger making the announcement yesterday, telling a conference in New York City the next installment of Star Wars will definitely be produced by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the team behind the popular HBO series. He didn't give any further details, though. That next Star Wars movie is not expected to hit theaters until 2022. Find us online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.
Good morning. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunter and Chamber Radio. We've got a fair 53 degrees today, mostly sunny. Chance of showers tonight, low of 51. Thursday, slight chance of showers, high of 73. Thursday night, partly cloudy. Friday, 40% chance of showers and a high of 75. Cloudy Friday night, but then the sun comes out again. Partly sunny on Saturday, high of 73. And partly sunny on Sunday, high of 74.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunter and Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good morning. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunter and Chamber Radio. This is Nicole Smith, and we are on Facebook Live today. If you want to check us out at Happy to Help, Happy to Help or at Happy Hunter. And I'm so thrilled today to welcome Andy Williams of Community in Crisis. Welcome.
Thank you.
And she is the Executive Director of Community Outreach and Development for Community in Crisis, which is in Bernardsville, New Jersey. And I'll just let you talk about what your role is there. And first of all, give us a little overview of what Community in Crisis is and what they do.
Sure. Thank you very much. So Community in Crisis began in 2014 following two overdose deaths a week apart. And the two people who passed away were good friends of our current chair and founder's daughter. So her name is Jody D'Agostini. So Jody's daughter called her in tears, obviously, and said, "Mom, how many more people are going to die before somebody does something?" And so this was a few years before it became front page news, the whole heroin and prescription pill epidemic. And so Jody decided to rally the herd, really. So she marshaled as many resources as possible, and I was one of those. And so we came together, and we were really fortunate because at that time, Also, JCADA, which is the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, they had a task force that had come out with an 88-page report. And that report was how communities could tackle the opioid epidemic on a local level using local resources, partnerships, collaborations, and so on, and basically incorporating many initiatives that are no to low cost. So this was like our blueprint. It was this sort of heaven-sent charter work that we were able to use and carve out our own charter work for community in crisis. So that's how we began. So we formulated many different task forces. As an example, we had a task force dedicated to law enforcement, engaging them, prescribers and physicians, school and student assistance counselors, clergy. So as you can see, it was a multifaceted approach based on recommended initiatives from JCADA task force. So we were really lucky. I mean, the stars aligned at the right time. Even back in 2014, there was some denial, definitely. People were still saying, no, it's not happening in sleepy old Bernardsville. It's not happening in Bernards Township, the Somerset Hills community. In general, it just really wasn't top of mind for most people, but it really was bubbling under the surface. And we saw that, and we felt that we were ahead of the curve. And indeed we were when I look back now. So, you know, rarely a day goes by that you don't see it as front page news or on the TV, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, Trump's always tweeting about it. I mean, it's definitely an issue for so many people. I don't think there's anybody that's not been touched by this in some way, shape, or form, right?
Right. And, so. And that's what we're finding. You know, it has such, you know, I say this rather cynically, it has such universal appeal. Unfortunately.
So, yeah.
You know, we keep hearing over and over again about everybody knows somebody, whether it's extended family, immediate family, or neighborhood. You know, sometime everyone knows about somebody.
Right, and so you covered it all, and then you funneled it all into the community hub that you created. It's a gorgeous
so that
space.
Came later. Yeah.
Okay.
So for quite a number of years, it was just a bunch of very passionate volunteers running around like headless chickens sometimes. but I say that jokingly. I mean, we were very intentional, and we had definitely had a pretty defined chart of work. And none of this could have taken place unless we'd had this incredible army of passionate volunteers. And, you know, I can name a number of them who have really taken this on board and spearheaded amazing initiatives that have become actually fantastic model programs for other communities to be able to take on themselves and implement. So for many years, we were just operating as volunteers, and then we started applying for some funding because we had none.
Mm-hmm.
And so our real landmark milestone was when we secured a federal grant called the Drug Free Communities Grant. And that basically guaranteed us, as long as we behaved ourselves and delivered on our promises, $125,000 a year for 5 years, potentially 10. So we'll hopefully get a continuation grant in another 3 years. So we're in year two of that. So that was a huge milestone for us. And then shortly thereafter, we secured funding also from the Horizon Foundation for New Jersey. You know, so they added opioids as one of their pillars, they're needing support. And so we were very fortunate. You know, we applied for grant funding from them and secured $100,000 from them.
Mm-hmm.
So that was huge for us. And then also we have some private family foundations in the Somerset Hills area, and we are incredibly blessed to have the support of the Gagnon Family Foundation too, so they step right in too. And with those three major funders, we were able to then start getting serious. And that funding, we were able to create two full-time positions. I'm one of them, and then my colleague and partner in crime is Tony Knoll. And she is also executive director, but of strategic initiatives. So, mm-hmm. And then with that, we were able to open up the hub. So we had no physical space before that, apart from an office in Basking Ridge Presbyterian Church, which they very kindly donated to us. And then we were able to open up this space in Bernardsville. So it's really best known as the old library.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to the 1730s. Do you know it?
Oh yeah, no, I've been there. I think it's a historical historic building just like this one,
yeah,
the
exactly.
Chamber of Commerce. Yeah, no, it's gorgeous, and no, I've been in there, and it's got the space and the living room space and the little kitchenette, right? And the coffee bar. Bar. Yeah, no. So your goal for this hub was to create a space for people to come and gather and volunteer and. And you have music events there and all kinds of stuff.
So it's multi-purpose. I mean, it's put us on the map for sure.
Yeah.
So we were thrilled with the space because it's got a very unusual for this kind of work. It's got a very welcoming high street location. So, mm-hmm. you know, typically this disease of addiction has been sort of typically confined to basements and mm-hmm. so on, and some secrecy and stigma that comes with it. We're not about that at all. We're all about, you know, we're here. We're here for you to support you in any way that we can. We're not right near the train station, so we hope that people can get to us by train if they're not driving anymore. So the purpose of the hub really is threefold. We do an awful lot of prevention programming.
Mm-hmm.
So that is really, you know, if we can stop people going down the path of addiction in the first place,
mm-hmm.
then that is the best result that we could ever possibly wish for. Because once an individual is afflicted with the disease of addiction, the whole family is addicted, right? The whole family is brought down emotionally, socially, financially. So if we can stop that in the first place, that's our best result. So we work with middle school children, and we bring them in to do community service opportunities. So we have something called the Hub Club. So the space is called the Community Hub. We have the Hub Club. And we typically have between 30 and 40 kids come after school on Thursdays, and they do a community service project. But whilst they're with us and feeling really good about giving back and helping others, they're also learning about healthy lifestyle choices and how to avoid some of the dangers associated with the misuse and abuse of substances. So that's a real win-win all around. And then we also have just started a high school program, which is a drop-in program on Sunday evenings. It's called Kickback, CIC, which is Community in Crisis. It was named by the kids themselves, Kickback.
I like that. Yeah,
yeah, it's great. And so, you know, registration is required, but it's all free. And the kids come, they can do homework, they can play board games. And it's unstructured but supervised by three mixed-gender adults, all of whom have undergone criminal background checks, child abuse prevention training, and all of whom will have, within 3 months of being hired as volunteers, taken mental health first aid training too. So, you know, that's two programs that we do on the prevention end, just in supporting our youth and keeping them hopefully safe and nurtured in a very positive environment.
Excellent. Well, all kinds of good stuff, and we'll delve into some of that in a little bit after our commercial break.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms. When they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on 100 in Chamber Radio. We're on Facebook Live today. You can watch us on at Happy 100 in, or you can go to Community in Crisis. They're also on Facebook and streaming, and they are our guest today, Community in Crisis. We're here with Andy Williams, who's the Executive Director of Community Outreach and Development for Community in Crisis. And we, before the break, we were talking about the community hub in Bernardsville that they've created and the three different areas of focus they have. Number one being prevention, which we covered, and we're going to pick up with number two. Andy.
Sure. Thanks very much. So our next pillar of focus is actually recovery support. So if you think about addiction, the disease of addiction, we are basically the bookends of disease. So I mentioned just a little earlier about how prevention programming, it takes place at the hub. We also have a number of programs on the other end of addiction, and that is once people achieve sobriety, it's a very difficult disease to combat, and relapse is part of recovery, you know, so the relapse rates are pretty high. And so we've, you know, had so many discussions and sought the advice of so many professionals. And based off their advice, we see that people in sobriety, the recovery community, they need more support. And what does that look like? And so we hear all the time that recovery is a very isolating state to be in. It's lonely because you hear, I'm sure you've heard of people, places, things. It's hard for them to reintegrate back into the community where once they struggled and where those connections had led them where they ended up. Mm-hmm. So there's a train of thought where people say you should avoid those things. We're trying to actually offer them the opportunity to come back, be surrounded by their family and their community that can support them by offering them connection again. So there's a great British author called Johan Hari, and his great quote is, "The opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection." So we try to create that connection. In doing so, we offer yoga on Thursday nights, so that's sober yoga. We ask that people are substance-free for 48 hours, and it's led by somebody in recovery. So that's on Thursdays, and it's free. We also have AA meetings and NA meetings. We have AA meetings on Tuesday evenings at 7:30, and we have about 60 or 70 people coming to that now.
Wow.
Yeah, from our Somerset Hills community. Oh. And we're just kicking off NA, well, actually it's called DAA, which is Drug Addicts Anonymous.
Okay.
That's the name they've chosen. And that's basically welcoming all substances and supporting them. And then I would love to ask Nick to jump in. We have a program. Oh, and let me just talk about, before I move off site, we also have acoustic coffee houses. They generally take place once a month, and we're very blessed to have the partnership and support of Love More for Julius. Julius Trombino, I believe you've had them on
the
show.
Yeah, they were on the show, yeah.
Love More for Julius, and Julius was a community member, Ridge High School graduate, who tragically passed away from an opioid overdose. And this organization, in his honor, offer music, expression of music, which is a great part for people in recovery to, you know, find that peacefulness and the expression through music. So we offer acoustic coffee houses once a month. We're thrilled to have Nikki Sumka of Lovemore bringing in all these musicians, most of whom, if not all of whom, are in recovery, and most of the audiences too. And we attract between 50 and 70 people to those events, which is great. And then finally, a program that we're really excited about is called Zest, and I'd love to hand this over now to our...
Yes, welcome, Nick Williams, the chef extraordinaire and inspiration behind Zest. So tell us your role with Community in Crisis and about the Zest program and what you've created.
Thank you, Nicole. So I volunteered initially to see what I could do to help the cause, which I totally believe in, and Andy was looking to roll out programs, and there was a program started in England by Jamie Oliver. So I'm not smart enough yet. The Naked Chef. I have cooked naked, but I don't
cook naked in the program. Hopefully not on camera. No,
we wouldn't have. We had three people leave the first time I tried to do that. So, but he started a program in London called 15, where he took 15 people who were in recovery. Not necessarily drug or alcohol addiction, but certainly young people that were down on their luck that needed help, and he started a restaurant in London. And that was totally employed by people that had joined his program. So everyone who cooked were people that were youth in help. So this triggered something in my mind, and I discussed with Andy to see what we could do for people in recovery to come and learn how to cook. And we've had two sessions now. We're in the middle of our second session. Typically 6 to 8 people, various ages that come that want to either learn more about cooking. It's an interest of theirs. They want to learn more. Maybe at some stage these may be people that want to take it to a professional level. And we cook typically 3 to 4 dishes every week. And we sit down at the end of it. We go through the whole preparation. Everyone's hands-on. Everyone's cooking. Everyone's throwing food in the air, and a lot of it's landing on the floor. And but that's all part of the learning process. And then we cook for an hour and a half, typically, and then we sit down and we socialize, because as Andy was saying, the connection part, what we heard from the first session was that the social part is very important. These people, it sounds awful.
Well, they're people.
The people, they need a social connection. So they come to be part. They can't go to bars and hang out. So they come, they cook, and they socialize afterwards. So at 8 o'clock, we all sit down. We pull the chair up to the dinner table. And we eat what we've cooked. And there's a lot of social interaction. And we found that 6 strangers become quite good friends by the end of 4 weeks. So it's a 4-week program. This time we are making week 4 a bit of a party, I would say, where we're going to cook party food. And we may invite some people to come and socialize, you know, friends of theirs that can come and sit down and participate. And we've had great response. People from the first session wanted to come back a second session. We haven't lost any fingers yet. We sharpened the knives, but a few Band-Aids. But yeah. Typically they're learning great kitchen techniques, knife skills, and... it's really encouraging them to get more involved with cooking as a passion, as a pastime. Mm-hmm. And we've had, as I say, great response. So
and I think it's quite therapeutic.
Yeah, no, I find chopping therapeutic. Like, yeah. I make soup all the time because I just love chopping vegetables. I just, you know, that. And you probably know this, that the sharp, having a sharp knife in the kitchen is the safe, most safe thing. You don't want
Absolutely.
A dull knife, right?
Yep.
And I always tell people they want to start cooking, I'm like, take a knife skills class, because that is your foundation, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And yes. The knives are very sharp. I mean, what we started with is you really, when you go to a kitchen store and they show you all these very, very nice sets of 10 and 12 knives, and we start with you need a 9 or a 10-inch knife, and you will do 90% of what we do with a 9 or 10-inch knife.
Is that a chef's knife? Would you call it a chef's knife?
Chef's knife.
Yeah, yeah.
The second knife would be a paring knife.
Yeah.
Just for the smaller details, and the third one would be a serrated knife. If you have three great knives, then that's all you need.
Well said.
So the 4 weeks, we did pork dishes last week. We're doing chicken tonight. We'll do three dishes, chicken dishes. We did do soups last time, and we'll do a week just on pastas. So they made homemade ravioli. They did a carbonara. It's a mixture of sophisticated, complicated dishes and a lot of very basic dishes.
No, so that's good. Well, and I always say we live in the Garden State, so why not take advantage, right? We have organic farms and vegetables and all kinds of amazing ingredients, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, what I loved last time, we had a mom and her son ask if they could join the program, and you know, she basically said to us, I've been through the ringer as much, if not more, than my son, right? And she said, I would love just to have some fun with him and enjoy, and you know, just enjoy chilling with him and doing this. So that was really nice. And so we learn as we go all the time. And so now, you know, all of our recovery programs invite also the caregiver, the loved one, even the sponsor. Right. Of the person, you know, the individual in recovery to join us and enjoy that time in any of our programs. So
I want to bring out or call attention to the fact that you blew this out of the water with your recent event called Chefs Unite. So do you guys want to talk about that? Because I wasn't able to go, but I did see it out there and I saw the press coverage and it was amazing. 30 chefs
incredible.
Came together, right?
Yeah, we couldn't have wished for better. And we were so blessed with the amazing coverage we got from recorded newspapers, the Burnersville News, you know, the editor there, Charlie Zavalik, and the photographer, Debbie Weissman. I mean, they just bless us so much with awareness and basically showcasing our programs and so on. So, yeah, it was sold out, and we sold 325 tickets. I had to close down registration.
Nice.
And we had 30 chefs sign up. One didn't show up. We found out a few days before because he broke his arm.
Oh,
so
bummer.
We'll give him that. Bless him. I hope he's feeling
aww.
Okay.
You can't cook one-handed. Poor excuse.
One-handed chef. And then sponsorships were incredible. The Gagnon Family Foundation were our presenting sponsors. Love them. And then we had a number of other corporate sponsors and private sponsors, which really boosted it. So we exceeded our goal. But I'd love Nick just from the, you know, as Nick has had a restaurant in his previous life, just talk about what that might mean to, you know, how come we got so many restaurants participating? Because they brought their food in. They brought their best game to that. It was absolutely a delightful extravaganza of tasting stations all through the inn. And it was all provided by them. It was incredible. And the Bernard's Inn provided the whole space as a donation to us also. So how blessed we are. Can you talk about the restaurants, Nick, and how you feel that?
Yeah. Did you use your chef connections?
Really. but I was involved with some of the recruitment, certainly. And it was a very easy recruitment process because going back, initially, what you were saying about this disease being so far-reaching, a lot of the owners and the chefs that you go into will say, you don't have to convince me. You know, I've lost my son, or I'm involved in it right now. So it was an incredible generosity by these restaurants. It was a Sunday afternoon between 1 and 4, which actually was good because it's typically, if you're not involved with a heavy brunch service, it's a good time.
There's no downtime in the restaurant business.
But their generosity was enormous. It was a very easy sell. I believe you had 23 last year. It was 30 this year. Very far ranging from cafes, bakeries, dessert stores, two very high-profile restaurants, and they all did one or two signature dishes. It was a very far-reaching array of food. You could just walk through. Everyone was so enthusiastic. Everyone was pleased to be there. We had great music going on, which you could
talk
about.
Some bagpipers, I think.
We did have some bagpipers, yep. I'll give a plug to the Guard Pipes and Drums.
Nice.
Which I am a member of.
Good for you.
So we piped everybody in.
I love it.
It was so cute.
Yeah, made a few people deaf halfway through the process as well. So, but the restaurants, again, the plug to all of them, we hope that they get something out of it. We hope that the patrons that came will support the restaurants that were there, all very local, from Basking Ridge and Bernardsville to, I think there was one from Westfield, some from Morristown. So certainly we like to think that we will support those restaurants because, you know, they gave and we'd like to give it back. So plug to that. But the food was superb, and you could literally walk through. I went around twice, I think, and just graze on some fantastic dishes, great chefs. It was a marvelous day.
Well, and the other lovely thing about it is it's a great social event. You know, so people came and just had a great time. It was the who's who, actually, of Somerset Hills, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Somebody said to me yesterday, if you weren't there, you know, it's like, why aren't you there? Everybody was there. So it really was a signature event for us. It was our biggest fundraiser of the year.
Nice.
And mark your calendars this time next year. We'll be doing it again.
Yes. And then, well, let's just segue into your other big event you do in October. Is that an annual event, the town hall, or no? Is that just something?
Well, this will be the second time that we've partnered with the Partnership for a Drug-Free New Jersey. So they're fantastic allies, supporters of ours. They've been with us, helping us from the start. They're more established than we are. And they've been a great sounding board for us, provided as many resources as possible from the start. So shout out to them. They've been wonderful. And so they have a town hall series that they began last year in partnership with the Horizon Foundation as well. And so they go into various towns and deliver town halls focused on the opioid epidemic. So it's called Knockout Opioid Abuse. And so they have a day in October when they have a sort of a statewide effort to raise awareness about the dangers of opioids, you know, whether it's prescribing by doctors, dentists, highlight on opioids and athletes. You know, athletes are at 20% more risk of becoming addicted to opioids because of their propensity for sports injuries. So just highlighting those risks and awareness. So we're partnering, we're going to be hosting the town hall at the Bernard's Inn again.
Nice.
Fantastic. So we'll have a panel of experts talking about the opioid epidemic. We'll have a parent testimonial also speaking about how the basically how the epidemic has impacted them. And, you know, that's really important. Parents turn to us all the time and say, we are terrified. What should I be looking for? I had no clue. You know, what's going on? What do we... So, you know, it's important that parents are forewarned and given some tools to be able to discuss these issues with their children and know what to look out for, the warning signs and symptoms of opioid abuse.
I think that segues nicely into vaping because certainly a lot of your education in terms of vaping, we hear parents say, well, vaping's harmless. You know, it's just it's flavored steam, and there's nothing wrong with this. So there's a huge education that has to happen with vaping because
it's chemicals coming directly into your body.
But it's tobacco companies basically trying to get the next generation hooked on nicotine. So what was originally something to get adults away from smoking to something that was a little bit healthier. This is really, with all the flavors that they're putting into these products, they're really attracting youth who are then getting hooked on nicotine. And that's...
Because it's highly addictive, right? Yeah, okay. Oh.
Yeah.
So what are the warning signs or vaping signs? Because I was talking to you before, teenagers are moody, they're erratic, they're, you know, I mean, it's all these warning signs kind of go with whatever a normal teenager could experience too. So how do you kind of find the difference?
It's very hard. You know, we hear this time and time again. So sure, you know, there's, everyone talks about those, you know, those teenagers, right? And I've had three myself, and it's very hard to distinguish between normal irrational behavior and, you know,
addictive
and behavior that really needs more probing and more investigation. So sure, it's hard, but there are definitely signs and symptoms. And in fact, this town hall on October 22nd at the Bernard's Inn, we will be having a presentation available before the town hall in the Bernard's Inn called Hidden in Plain Sight. So that's offered by the DEA office. And that basically is parents can walk through what looks like a setup of a bedroom. So knowing where to look for, you know, so if you're suspecting, you know, so they say there's, you know, if there's smoke, there's fire, right? So you got to look for, you know, I better check this out. So, knowing what to look out for, you know, are there teaspoons missing in your house, you know, where they may have hidden. I mean, they're so resourceful, these kids, right?
Yeah.
Way more than we are. And so knowing where to look for some signs that maybe they're using or purchasing drugs, they're so easy to purchase over the internet. Mm. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I have a, you know, Prime Amazon account. And when I get my credit card, Amazon, I don't really check it. I should be checking it, right?
Yep.
I mean, I think, okay, there's $25, there's a $40. That must have been, I don't know, something I ordered, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Check them, mm-hmm. because the kids can check off the fact that they're 18. They can order stuff. They can be delivered to the house before mom and dad are home.
Wow.
And there they've got this great vaping kit, right,
wow.
that we don't even know they've got. So... anyway, other signs and symptoms could be, sure, a change in mood. It could be, you know, falling grades. It could be different friends, hanging around different friends.
Friends are a big one, I would think,
friends,
right?
Are,
yeah.
A big one. You know, just a lack of interest in things that they were formerly interested in. It could be, you know, pinpoint pupils, dilated pupils. Itchiness, itchy skin.
Really?
Yeah, all kinds of weird stuff. So parents need to be on the lookout. It's a scary world out there. And, you know, my heart aches for parents who are, you know, really feel that there's something going on, but they're not sure how to deal with it.
That might be a good time to talk about. I mean, also, when you have kids over to the house, you see kids in bathrooms. Where are you keeping your medication?
Oh, yeah.
They go into bathrooms to steal medication if you have
nice
people
one,
over.
Nick. Yeah.
I believe that, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yeah. And also, but maybe to talk about getting rid of drugs.
Yeah, so that there are two things there. I don't know how long we've got before the next
break.
You're
good. Go.
So, yeah, what Nick mentioned, you know, we hear all the time, a high percentage of drugs that are misused or abused. So that means... that they may have been doctor prescribed, but people are taking them who are not intended, you know, as the consumer of those drugs, or they've been sold them by a friend. So a high percentage of prescription pills are taken from friends or family members. You know, if everybody who's listening to this show was to go home or open their medicine cabinet, they probably would find, I had them in my medicine cabinet only a couple of years ago, they would find probably opioids that they no longer need or didn't completely use. Get rid of them, because whether it's your gardener asking to use the bathroom, your cleaner if you're lucky enough to have one, a contractor that's coming around may just use your bathroom, they are all friends, your kids' friends. They're there and they're going to be diverted and misused. So get rid of those. We work with realtors, so open houses.
Oh.
We say to realtors, tell your clients during
wow.
open houses
wow.
to lock away meds if they need to keep them or get rid of them, right? So that's another one. We work yeah. with senior living facilities. They're the biggest hoarders
I'm sure.
of narcotics, right?
Viagra.
Chronic pain. and so on. So we work with senior living facilities to say to them, let's just empty out your medicine cabinets and keep what you need, sure, but get rid of the other stuff.
Yeah.
And at some point, I'd love to talk about vaping because that's been a big focus of ours too. So
that's okay. Also, the disposable days.
Yeah. So we just had one in April. So twice a year, there's Drug Take Back Day. It's part of a national DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency effort.
And they can get those dates on your website, which is communityincrisis.org.
Thank you.
Right? And
absolutely.
You're on Facebook and all that. So, all right, well, we'll take a real quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about vaping, and I want to talk about volunteering.
Very good.
Okay.
Rapp Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rapp Coin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on 100 in Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. 100 in Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. You're listening to Happy to Help on 100 in Chamber Radio, and we're on Facebook Live today at Happy 100 in, or you can go to the Community in Crisis Facebook page or check out their website, communityincrisis.org. Talking with Andy Williams, who's the Executive Director of Community Outreach and Development, and we want to dive even more into vaping because that's a huge issue. We could go on for hours about every issue related to drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, but that seems to be a hot button right now, right? Vaping?
Sure. Thank you, Nicole. So I think we need to take a step back, really, and think about what any kind of substance, the effect it has on anyone's brain, but particularly the adolescent brain. So, you know, we hear it's 21 for a reason. I mean, back in Britain, you know, the drinking age is 18. So is there any rhyme or reason to those ages? No, because actually the brain is still maturing and growing up to the age of approximately 25. And so introducing any kind of harmful substance to the adolescent brain before that age, unfortunately, really increases the odds of future addiction by quite an incredible percentage. So the earlier use of a harmful substance on the adolescent brain, the higher the percentage likelihood of future addiction to, you know, much more harmful substances. So with vaping, that is a huge concern for us. And nicotine, which is in many of the devices, not all of them, is one of the most addictive substances that any person could ingest. And so, and once you're addicted to nicotine, it's very hard to kick. And as I'm sure many listeners have experienced that. So there's a company out there called Juul. They're one of many manufacturers of e-cigarettes. And they make these tiny little pods that look like USBs.
Oh, yeah.
And one pod contains the equivalent nicotine quantity as a whole pack of cigarettes. And so they're very hard to detect. So this hidden in plain sight demonstration that we'll have on October 22nd, it'll show you pods like that. And parents might think they're just USBs. And they can plug into the side of a laptop and be sort of activated that way. They could look like they're part of a pen. But they are basically a pack of cigarettes that a kid, when put into an e-cigarette, will then inhale directly into his or her lungs. And they reckon that 5 Juuls, or 5 packs of cigarettes, is all it takes for most people to become full-blown addicted to nicotine. So then what happens? Statistics show that 33% of people who smoke e-cigarettes will eventually end up smoking cigarettes anyway. So, sure, it might be a healthier alternative for somebody who's smoking cigarettes, an adult, but it certainly is in no shape or any form a healthy thing, healthy activity for any adolescent to partake in. And then you've got e-cigarettes that just are flavored liquids. And the manufacturers of these say, well, it's geared to helping people switch from cigarettes. You know, they're called candy floss or candy cane and pancake man and berry. I don't see that they're really geared to adults. I think they've been geared to trying to get adolescents involved in e-cigarettes. And those liquids themselves, a high percentage of them contain, are you ready for this? Formaldehyde, arsenic, nickel, lawn chemicals, you name it. So, and they're inhaling them directly into their young lungs. Mm-hmm. And not confirmed, but there are talks of, there are rumors out there, or actually some proof that there's this can lead to popcorn lung, which is, I believe, I'm not a scientific expert in any shape or form, but a sort of stage 4 lung cancer that can be potentially contracted from ingesting these, vaping these liquids.
Yeah. So, not good news at all. So definitely if you can deter your teen from trying it, getting involved in it. And so one of the things that this show is about and what you do so effectively is you create a community, and instead of trying to get that high that teens want to experience through nicotine or whatever, we want them to be high on life, at the risk of sounding corny. But I always say that volunteering and helping others is the key to happiness. So if they can develop that at an early age, and so you offer different programs for teens and middle schoolers, high schoolers to come in and volunteer with your organization and get them hooked on volunteering, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
right?
Well, exactly. And, you know, just to expound on that too, you know, volunteerism is a big part of recovery. So we have an awful lot of people in the recovery community who do a lot of volunteer work for us, right? So that's a fantastic win-win for us all around. But just to finish up on vaping, one of our volunteers who is our chair of the school working group, Heather, she has been an absolute gem. So she came to us and said, I would like to have a vaping display and basically take it on the road. And so at first we were a little bit skeptical about it, but it's been the most amazing step in terms of education out in the community. So she basically puts all these e-cigarette confiscated devices, the law enforcement have provided them to her, devices that are being confiscated from school children, and she puts them out in a display, and she goes to different organizations and talks about the different types of vaping devices, what to look out for, what's contained in them. And so parents, I mean, we've literally reached tens of thousands of people, and I mean that, through health fairs, through going into organizations like Somerset Votech, Bridgewater. We've been at most of the schools in Somerset Hills. Heather has done 21 demonstrations since September last year.
Wow.
And we're reaching so many people in doing that. We have a whole vaping toolkit now. on a section of our website, so any parent or educator can go in there and look at materials they could use in the classroom, talking points for their for parents, because it's really hard for parents to know how to broach the subject with their kids, and so we have tips and tools on how to do that. So that's the vaping thing. So we're really pleased about that, and it's really opened a lot of doors, you know, for community in crisis, because nicotine is a gateway drug. There's no doubt about it, to future addiction to other substances. So
yeah,
it's been great.
I think it also opens up a bigger social problem, because it comes back to eating around the meal table with your family, talking to people. Because e-cigarettes have become the cool thing, a bit like drinking. So this really opens up the question of talking to your kids about, you don't have to be cool. I mean, we've heard of many instances where the first time some of these kids, maybe they're being bullied, and the first time they get really included in a group is with the kids that are taking drugs. And it's the first time that they've really had this social interaction. So we really have to think about, how do we keep them safer, and how do we keep them out of that that group where are you talking to your children? So the education part, it's broader. It's not just about taking drugs, but what else are they going through as teenagers, and how else can we keep them safe?
Right, right. Yeah. And that is a good segue to the volunteer opportunities that we do offer, because as Nick mentions, you know, involving them in a group project where they're actually interacting with kids from other schools. I mean, sometimes some of our volunteer projects that we do bring in, you know, kids from five different schools. So Hub Club gives them volunteer projects every week. The other ones that we love to do are projects that benefit other organizations that are connected to our mission. So it could be the Market Street Mission up in Morristown, the Center for Great Expectations. So we will host a weekend, a day of giving back. And last time we did one with the middle school kids, we had 60 kids enrolled. Okay. And they came to the Hub, and the kids love it at the Hub because it's so old and cool. And they literally rolled up their sleeves. And I will shamelessly admit that we offer little incentives, like a really nice lunch from Chipotle sometimes, or things like that.
Chipotle, but, you don't say that twice.
Exactly.
For the game.
Not always, though. And they come and they leave having made friends, feeling really connected, feeling so good about giving back. Some of them get community service hours if they need them. And they've made new friends, too. So it's just a win-win all round, and we love that whole volunteer opportunity component. It's a big part of our mission.
Yeah, one of the big quotes that I've been saying on the show a lot is, philanthropy is the new community. Because people, you know, aren't going to church as much anymore, and then the crazy schedules, you're not in the neighborhood anymore. If you're, you know, your soccer friends are different from your school friends or whatever, but you can really create community around philanthropy if you're united for a common cause to help others. You get the community, the connection, and the happiness to boot. So you guys have, guys have created that whole space. And so you've got that. What are some of the things that do they do for Great Expectations? They've been on the show too. Do they do bags for the moms or the babies? Or
So for the past two Valentine's Day, the moms wake up on Valentine's Day morning, and they and their little one get a bag, and it's filled with messages of hope. And, you know, smellies and chocolate and all that kind of a thing. So that's great. And, you know, those kind of programs are fun. You know, we're able to do them because of our funders. And we're so grateful to them. And I must just, you know, of interest, local interest, we've just actually been awarded by the Far Hills Race Meeting Association $50,000 a year for 3 years.
Nice.
And their award will help us deliver on many of the recovery support programs, as well as some of the volunteer opportunities. So, you know, we're really grateful to them. We were one of five local charities to be chosen as recipients of their funding. And that money they raised through the Far Hills races, right? I'm sure most of us, the steeplechase,
the hunt,
are aware
yeah.
of that. And so it's fantastic. They, you know, they are bringing community together, but then giving back to community by supporting efforts like ours. So we're really grateful for that.
Right, and you also brought Chris Herron, the NBA star, in to talk to the schools that last year, I think, too.
Yeah,
that
was a few years ago, actually. Yeah, so he was a huge draw. So, you know, a lot of dads came with their kids.
Yeah.
And he tells an incredible message about how it can just begin with a red Solo cup down in the basement.
So, you know,
the parents who are, well, they're safe. I've taken their keys away.
Yeah.
They're down there. They've only got beer. Well, hey, wake up. Think again.
Yeah. No, that's very true. Because, I mean, I'm the nosy parent that I always go down in the basement periodically unannounced. And they're like, well, you know, it's so awkward, Mom. I'm like, well, that's my job.
Yeah, sorry about that, kids, but that's it.
That's right.
And,
yeah.
You know, we often hear or say, you know, we wish that people thought more about the fact that parent is also a verb. It's not just a noun.
Yeah, that I always say, if your parents tell you they hate you, then you're doing the right thing. You're the worst mom ever. I'm like, okay, thank you.
Yeah, so, it's tough.
Yeah, well, it was wonderful having you guys. Community in Crisis, check them out online. Check out the video. And there's a million programs and ways you can get involved. So thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it very much.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
It's nothing short of an attack on women's basic human rights and civil rights.
That's New York Democratic Senator and presidential hopeful Kirsten Gillibrand saying the Alabama Senate's approval of a bill that would ban nearly all abortions without even making exceptions for rape and incest is an outrage.
And it's something that women of America are going to have to fight against with everything they've got.
Republican Governor Kay Ivey is expected to sign it into law. The authors of the bill have said their aim is to get the bill to the U.S. Supreme Court in the hope that it will lead to the overturning of 1973's Roe v. Wade decision, which legalized abortion. President Trump is about to honor law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty, speaking at a Peace Officers Memorial Day service in Washington. It's part of Police Week, which runs through Saturday. And this is USA Radio News.
I'm not going very far.
It's too uncomfortable.
I'm in a hurry. Sometimes I just forget.
There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. You're not only putting yourself at risk of injury or death, it could also cost you lots of money. Cops are writing tickets, so why take the risk? Do the smart thing and start buckling up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Here's a great deal on MyPillow. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, type in promo code USA, you'll get two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. Now that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere at retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA.
Senator Lindsey Graham introducing a bill this morning to address what he calls a horrible situation at the southern border. The South Carolina Republican says it makes necessary changes in the U.S. asylum system. He argues the system makes it too easy for migrants to get into and remain in the U.S. Graham chairs the Senate Judiciary Panel. Tiger Woods and his girlfriend Erica Herman being sued for the wrongful death of an employee at the Woods restaurant in Jupiter, Florida, which they own. A bartender, Nicholas Immersberger, who the lawsuit says was known to be a drinker, was often permitted to drink during and after his shift. He was killed in a one-car crash after one of those shifts last year. And now, the lawyers for the family are alleging that video evidence from the restaurant's been destroyed.
They knew about the crash that night. And shortly thereafter, that video evidence was then destroyed and deleted off of the servers that they had there at the Woods.
That's lawyer Spencer Cuban, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Hundreds of TSA staffers and air marshals are traveling to the southern border to help deal with the rising tide of migrants, according to the administration. The deployment comes as summer travel is starting to ramp up. TSA officials acknowledging in an internal email that redirecting staff to the border will create some risk of fewer resources to handle airport security. They say the redeployment, though, won't involve uniformed airport screeners, at least not at first. The State Department's warning U.S. citizens not to travel to Iraq, saying there's a high risk for violence and kidnapping there as tensions between the U.S. and Iran are ramping up. The Department